doing that, holding you to see if you have any warrants?
Well, you know, they, as long as they got the guns, they're going to use brute force. What I would do to combat that would get rid of the city council, because the city council is in charge of the city police, and they're the ones that are making these policies. So get rid of these people and put the right kind of people in office, and not take care of your problem with the peace officers, because the peace officers won't do anything unless they have permission to do it from higher up. So higher up is your problem. It's not the peace officers on the street. They're just doing their job, what they think their job is. So someone up higher is saying, hey, go out there and harass these people. Well, find out who those higher ups are and get rid of them.
I agree with that, certainly. Getting rid of the higher-ups in Santa Cruz would be my fondest dream, but we'll have to see if the community agrees with me. If folks want to get in touch with you or with folks who are sharing your ideas, who can articulate them, who do you suggest they call or write?
Theodora, give her a call. If you're doing a hardcore, she'll get in touch with me, and I'll tell her that what that person should do, and if they're having a hard time doing it, then I'll get in my car and I'll drive down to Santa Cruz and take care of it myself. I've done it many times in other towns. I've been to Bakersfield to get a biker out that was there for 10 days with no helmet, and I filed a writ of habeas corpus. He got out within 45 minutes. I went to Eureka one day. A man did an illegal left-hand turn in front of a highway patrol. And he wouldn't sign a ticket, and they put him in jail for 3 days. I found out about it. I went over there, filed a writ of habeas corpus, and he got out in about 2 hours.
So if you want to get in touch with BD, why don't you give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I will contact you, connect you with Theodora, who's on the Hemp Council, and has also been expressing, I guess she's been helping you organize local lectures and forums around the issue of how to exercise your constitutional rights to be taken to a magistrate.
Right, and we're going to have another one down here in Santa Cruz, and in 30 days, 45 days, we'll have another one down here. I've done two down here so far, and I've been so well received that I want to come back again. I mean, I'm begging to come back down here.
I think people are begging to hear you. Your name is on the lips of many. I really wanted to spend some time, and I hope we can in the future, to talk about how specifically homeless people can use your approach.
I tell you what, next time I come down, I'll work up a thing with you to get on the show again, and I'll just deal with the homeless people. How's that? Because the homeless people are in my heart, if I could suggest it to you folks here in Santa Cruz, go to court tomorrow and back my friend up here. He needs all the backing he can get.
Jorge Castro, you're speaking.
Jorge, yeah. I didn't know I could speak Spanish. Jorge, that's cute.
It's pretty good.
I'd like to say, B, that if I'm not sitting in prison Tuesday, I'll be at that rally up in San Francisco you.
Well, look for me. You know, I'm the big tall guy with the black cowboy hat.
I really know who you are now. And another thing is since I'm not a felonist or anything yet, maybe I should go work for you as one of your deputies up at Trinity County.
So, folks interested in following your case, Jorge should show up tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
No, it's in the afternoon.
Oh, it is in the afternoon. I'm sorry.
Just do our jury selection tomorrow.
So, you want to see jury selection come at 10, but the actual trial should start about 1:30. And that's in Department 2 at Commissioner Salazar's Court. And again, look on the calendar for Jorge Castro, C-A-S-T-R-O. Mr. Castro is accused of facilitating a sale of crack or something, soliciting. And as he's described, if you've heard, it sounds like a bogus deal. So come on by to see that and show your support. Sometimes people in the audience who are well-behaved but definitely in solidarity can have an impact on the jury and on the court generally. And B.E., I guess, are you going to the Hemp Festival later today?
I'm headed there right now.
So bring a fatty and head for that Hemp Festival. I don't seem to be smoking much marijuana there. It seems kind of a little straight-laced to me, but hey, you know, the great outdoors. You don't want to blow smoke in someone's face who doesn't want it, I suppose. You know, that's always a question. B.E., thank you very much for coming today. I'm honored to have you, and you too, Jorge. Thank you for coming. We're going to follow your case. I'll be in court tomorrow checking out probably the jury selection. All right.
Boy, that would boost my spirits.
And we've got our next guests coming up are going to be two... our next guest coming up is going to be a man who was at a witness to a recent police shooting a week ago, the shooting of Brian Andrus. And you folks are welcome to hang out if you want, or stay later. You can join the conversation, or you can move on, whatever feels good to you.
Well, I have a meeting I have to go to down at the Hemp Place, so they're waiting for me, and I'm going to get down there. So I appreciate you having me here, and like I said, I'll love to come back again.
And don't forget, Robert, that us laborers down at San Lorenzo Labor, we certainly think of you down there, and I hope in the future, if we have any problems, you could come to our assistance.
I would like to do that, and I'd like to have you on the air again, Jorge, sure. Because I know we didn't cover all the subjects that we wanted to.
We didn't cover what I really wanted to talk about.
But thank you for coming this time.
Okay.
Stay tuned for more on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
And he fills it only halfway. And before I even argue, he is looking out the window at somebody coming in. It is always nice to see you, says the man behind the counter to the woman who has come in. She is shaking her umbrella, and I look the other way as they are kissing their hellos, and I'm pretending not to see them, and instead I pour the milk. I open up the paper, there's a story of an actor who had died while he was drinking. It was no one. Inside, does she see me? No, she does not really see me, 'cause she sees her own reflection. And I'm trying not to notice that she's hitching up her skirt, and while she's straightening her stockings, her hair has gotten wet. The morning as I'm listening to the bells of the cathedral, I am thinking of your voice.
yes, you're still tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobe's Pier Robert Norse on Bathrobe's Pier's Broadsides, twice weekly show about civil rights here in Santa Cruz. And we're having lots of civil rights talk today, lots of live talk, and really quite a day for us here on Bathrobe's Pier's Broadsides. In the studio, we have a guest I've been trying to corral for a couple of days. I finally rounded him up. He's a working man, so it's he goes over the hill to work, so it's good that he could say something to his commitment, to your commitment, Rick, that you could come in here today. We're talking to Rick Peterson, who lives on Button Street, right across from the Wild West Shooting Gallery that was happening a week ago there. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Good afternoon.
You're a family man. You have two children.
Two children, yes, aged 13 and 8.
And a lot of children play in that neighborhood.
Oh, yes, especially on a sunny Sunday afternoon.
What happened on that sunny Sunday afternoon a week ago? I know we interviewed you at the time and we heard some of what you said, but pretend that you haven't told us anything. What happened on a week ago today, Sunday?
Well, it was a nice quiet afternoon, and probably about 15 children out playing on Button Street. You know, I was out playing football with a bunch of children just previous to this incident, and the Anders family, which includes a husband, wife, and a little 2-year-old child, he went out surfing, and he had a bad day or whatever, and he came back home sort of enraged, and they got into a little verbal argument. Apparently nothing physical, just verbal, and the police were called, and of course the police came, and his wife answered the door, and she did not want the police to come in and get involved with the situation, so she asked them politely if they would just leave, and so she went to shut the door, and one of the policemen put his foot in the door and stopped the door from being shut.
Officer Garazio, I understand.
Yes, it is. And they proceeded to barge their way into the house, and apparently, this is the part we couldn't witness, but I'm going on what she said, is that they were a little forceful with her, and apparently...
Lori Andrus, the...
Lori Andrus, the wife.
The wife.
They were a little forceful with her, and apparently the husband came downstairs and witnessed them being a little forceful with his wife, and of course this was all inside the house, so we couldn't witness what was going on in the house, but apparently... he grabbed a bat, and the police didn't like that fact, and they opened fire on him. And this was all outside, in which my wife, my son, my daughter, and maybe 5 other children witnessed point blank. They saw the man being shot, and he was a friend, especially of my son's, who skateboarded with my son. My son borrowed his skateboard, and they saw one of their neighbors shot down.
How is he doing now, do we know?
Well, last I heard, he is still in critical condition in the San Jose Hospital. They airlifted in from Dominican Hospital to San Jose Hospital.
And how long ago was that you heard the last report from him?
Probably Friday. Friday afternoon.
Initially it was fair, then it was serious, then it was critical, then it slipped back to serious, and so that was about midweek that I'd heard.
Right. And the police told Lori, which is the wife, told her that Sunday evening after they questioned her at the police department, they informed her that he was going to be released from the hospital that same night and put into custody in Santa Cruz jail.
This is as he sort of lingered on the border between life and death?
Yeah, with 4 bullet holes in him.
4 police officers were involved in this activity. I guess 3 of them shot?
Yes, apparently 3 of them shot, and 1 did not. And what was most appalling to me was that I ran over there right after the shooting. The victim was lying on the ground with visible bullet holes in him. When I first approached him, he looked deceased to me. He was very gray, and from what I could tell, he wasn't breathing, and I assumed he was deceased.
Was he wearing any clothing?
He had on a pair of shorts and no shirt, just a pair of shorts on, because he just came out of the surf. And when I approached him, like I said, he had visible bullet holes, big bullet holes all over his body. He looked deceased, and I went to approach him, and approached his wife and asked what was going on in front of all the police. And what was most appalling was that they didn't bother to cover him up. He was face down in a mud pile. And if he was on the verge of dying, the police department most definitely did not care, because they did not try to revive him. Nobody was assisting him. No one covered him up. They wouldn't let myself nor his wife assist him.
What did the police seem to be doing when you arrived?
They were in a group talking to each other.
Did you hear anything that they were saying? Did any of them seem to be injured?
No, not one of them seemed to be injured.
So there was no police officer like limping or holding a part of his body?
None at all.
And how many police officers were there when you arrived?
There was five police officers down right at the scene, and there were police the whole time rolling up to the incident. So there was a group of five of them.
About what time did you arrive on the scene, Rick?
Oh, yeah, 30 seconds to a minute, right after the shooting.
How do you know it was that period of time? I guess you conferred with another witness who actually saw the shooting?
No, actually, I could tell that he just sort of went down. I can just tell.
How could you tell that?
Because he, it was just obvious to me that he had just gone down. I can tell that he had just landed in that position.
And who else was on the scene when you arrived? Other than the police, you mentioned.
His wife and his 2-year-old daughter.
Did you attempt to assist his wife in any way?
Yes, I did. I asked his wife if she would like me to take the child out of the house. And in doing so, the police told me I was obstructing their investigation, and they told me to get out of the area.
And what was the reaction of Lori, the mother, when they said this?
She didn't really react to that. She was still sort of hysterical that they shot her husband.
And what did the police do in response to her? Was she saying things to the police of any sort?
Well, she kept pointing to one police officer. I don't have their names memorized yet. But anyway, she kept pointing to the officer that he did it. He didn't have to shoot my husband. She kept pointing to one particular officer.
Did the other officers have any response to what she was saying?
No. They were responding to me because they wanted me to leave the scene.
Did you leave the scene?
I backed up slowly. I sort of refused to leave the scene. And they were getting a little hostile with me.
Hadn't drawn their weapons yet?
Not on me, no.
What were other people in the neighborhood doing at this moment? Were they just watching? Or?
Ooh, people were starting to gather, yes. And while I was conversing with the police, they proceeded to put up their yellow tape, and nobody could penetrate the tape.
This was about, what, 6 in the evening, about that time?
Yeah, uh-huh.
It was still light?
Oh, yes, it was still light. And a sunny Sunday afternoon.
I understand that the door to Brian's car, the window had been broken. He broke the window trying to get into his car, I heard.
Yes. Apparently he was out surfing, and before he went surfing, I guess he locked his keys in the car, and when he came out of the surf, he realized that, and he apparently broke the window with his hand, and in doing so, it cut his hand, and he drove back to the apartments, and while walking into the house, apparently there was some drops of blood at the doorstep of their apartment, and the police saw that, and I guess that's why they thought maybe that there was some violence involved, and that wasn't the case whatsoever.
Not to confuse our audience and to clarify things, a lot of, I want to distinguish between what you saw, which is really most important to me, and what you heard, and possibly what you heard, you know, may have been from a very reliable source. I understand you were in close contact with another witness who actually saw this from a porch.
Yes, my wife. My wife witnessed the whole thing right from our porch, which has a bird's eye view of their apartment.
She's got good vision?
Yes, excellent.
In fact, for those who've been following this case, she spoke, we've actually heard some of her testimony through you earlier. You spoke, I guess on the scene when you talked, you mentioned that your wife had been on the phone to Brian Andrus, the man who was shot, his wife, immediately afterward, because I understand she then retreated into the house, Brian Andrus' wife, the woman with the child, Lori.
Yes, she did retreat into the house.
You saw this?
Yes, I was standing 20 feet from the whole scene the whole time. I sort of did refuse to leave. And she did retreat into the house, and after the ambulance left, which took about 5 minutes to arrive on the scene, and he was suffering heavily the whole time, she did retreat into the house, and after they escorted Brian away, the police banged on her door and kept banging on her door, and she refused to answer. Eventually, one of the police officers went to the manager of the apartment complex and retrieved the keys to her front door and went in. And
you saw this. This isn't a secondhand story.
No. I saw the whole thing. It wasn't quite apparent to me if the police officer opened the door or if the apartment manager opened the door, because they were both right there, and I couldn't tell which one opened the door.
But presumably this was against the will of the woman inside.
Oh, very much so. Yes, she wanted nothing to do with them.
What happened then?
They went into the apartment, and they were in there for maybe 5 minutes, and they escorted her and her little child out to the police car and escorted them to the police station.
By escorted, you mean forced her to leave?
Oh, yeah, I would say so, yes.
On what basis? You said
she obviously didn't want to leave because she didn't open the front door for them.
Did she protest as she was let out?
Minimal.
So on what basis do you say that you felt she didn't want to leave? Did you have some later contact with someone who spoke to her later and got information on that?
Yes, my wife was in close conversation with her via the telephone. And she said that she did not want to open the door for them, and that she did not want anything to do with them.
And what happened after she went to the police station? Did your wife get a further conversation on that? Any further information? How was she treated by police? Was she interrogated? Was she simply dropped off at a motel? Was she returned? What happened?
Well, apparently, she was interrogated for quite some time. I don't know the details about that, but after the interrogation process. They did take her to a motel room for the night, and she did mention to us that they were going to release him that same evening and book him into San Luis County Jail, which we thought was absurd because we knew that was going to happen.
He's probably handcuffed with gurney where he is. I mean, that's the standard process. We know that that's often what law enforcement authorities do with prisoners. I got a letter from a man last month who's in jail in England on LSD charges, and he has melanoma. And his entire operation, he was handcuffed to the railing while he was being operated on. He's probably going to die soon because it's an incurable condition, even though we're talking about Tamarack, by the way, for all those who are out in the audience who may know him. He's a local Santa Cruz drummer who was set up in a drug bust, and actually, his case resulted in his being able to alleviate the condition of a lot of other people being held for LSD possession in England. LSD and other drugs, and the view of many of us, are victimless crimes unless they involve some violence against other people and shouldn't be punished with years and years in jail. In any case, getting back to your situation, sorry for the aside there. What was your reaction to the shooting? What thoughts went through your mind, and how did you feel about it?
Well, I voiced my opinion to the police when I first walked upon the scene. As I can recall, my first gesture to the police was, why did you shoot a man? You didn't have to shoot a man. I said, why did you shoot a man in front of all these children and all these neighbors?
And what did they tell you?
They told me promptly that I better leave very fast or I'll be arrested.
And did the neighbors seem to share your views, or were you alone in that opinion?
Oh no, the general consensus around the whole neighborhood, even people that I thought would have a different opinion than myself, everybody agreed that was a very unnecessary force, and that it was a very uncalled for thing in front of the general public, and it was a very unsafe thing to do in front of the general public.
Particularly, I would assume, in front of the children?
Very much so. My son, the very next day, Monday, at school, he had...
He was an eyewitness to this, correct?
Yes, he was. In fact, he was on the sidewalk when it happened. Uh, he had to go through counseling at school the very next day, and it's probably going to be continuing counseling for him.
Is he having trouble sleeping or any untoward effect?
Oh yeah, uh-huh, very much so. He's now very insecure at nighttime. He knew this gentleman who got shot pretty well, and my son never saw him do anything wrong, and to have him witness his friend being gunned down was a very traumatic thing for him. And it still is. He's still very very upset and concerned about the whole thing. And I think it's very unfortunate that they did this shooting in front of a lot of people who some of the people are very sensitive towards this thing, and it's going to wear on the neighborhood very hard. Some people are having very traumatic side effects from this, and I think it's very unfair that they put us through all this.
Have you had much conversation with other neighbors about the situation in the days that followed?
Yes, a few of the neighbors. And like I said, the general consensus is everyone agreed that it was a very unfortunate and a very bad mistake by the Santa Cruz Police Department to shoot this man. He might have, Byron Andrus might have made a bad decision, but the police made a very, very bad decision. And they should not make those kind of bad decisions.
Yeah, the city is paying the police not to make those, to make the proper decisions, and,
exactly.
And Brian isn't getting paid anything. I mean, he can fuck up, I guess, more easily than police, in candid language. Have any neighbors, or have you yourself thought of filing a complaint with either the Citizens Police Review Board or with the City Council or with both about this situation?
Yes, my wife and I, we talk about this at great lengths. We are checking into options on what we can do. Basically on behalf of, on the neighborhood. I work in a law firm, I have the resources to do this type of thing, and I think I will pursue this.
We did an interview with Allie. Allison, one of the neighbors who didn't actually witness it, but whose child was nearby, and he was shocked that this kind of shooting would occur, this kind of bullet-type crossfire with kids so close, and also apparently was somewhat dismayed that it happened at all, given the fact that, I guess you told me earlier, and I think I heard from another witness, that Brian had difficulties with police in the past, and that in a way, Lori, his wife, was trying to avert the situation by directing the police not to come in.
Yes, that was my interpretation of the whole situation, was that she was trying to avoid a confrontation, maybe because he was enraged already, but there was, like I said, there was no violence. And I commend her on her trying to avoid the situation, but it didn't work. They did barge their way into the house, and I think they brought this upon themselves, because this, the whole situation could have been avoided.
And I understand also, correct me if I'm wrong, do you have any information that there was a woman who called the police but did not call 911? Instead, she called the business office of the police in order to report that there was a disturbance, but that there wasn't any sort of a serious emergency.
That I don't know. I don't know how that took place. I don't know. Why they called, I don't know.
Right, no, I'm not entirely sure of that. You also have spoken to police investigators and to, I guess, investigators from the district attorney's office. How has that experience been?
Well, I had two district attorneys, assistant district attorneys, I suppose, approach me the next Monday morning on my way to work. They came up to my doorstep and they asked me some questions, and I guess I didn't really respond favorably to their questions. And what was interesting was we talked for about 10 or 15 minutes, and at the end of the conversation, he had flipped over his notepad and there was a tape recorder there, and he had tape recorded my whole interview, and I didn't even realize he was doing this. But they said that they would come back again and talk to me at length some more, and they never did, and I suppose that's because I didn't tell them the things that they wanted to hear.
What kinds of things did they ask you? What did you feel they were looking for that you didn't tell them?
Well, I suppose they were looking for some kind of justification in this whole thing, and I failed to justify anything.
Some justification for the police behavior.
Yes, exactly. Everybody I talked to, every eyewitness at the scene, not one of them saw a swinging bat. No one saw that.
The DA investigators indicate that they had witnesses who had seen a swinging bat, a strike, any of the people?
Yes, they told me they do have one eyewitness, and to this day, I don't know who that is, but they do have one eyewitness that said that they did see him swing a bat and strike an officer. And I don't know who that is, and I don't know how they could have saw that, because no one else saw it.
You said your wife was an eyewitness to this.
Yes.
Did she tell you she saw them strike anybody? Because she apparently saw she saw him emerge from the house, and did she see anybody struck with a bat?
No, she did not. Now, it was quite possible that might have happened inside the house. They live in a very small loft apartment in which you could not swing a bat in the apartment. It's a very small front room. But there was a bat at the scene lying on the grass. No one ever saw him with it. So I don't know. I can't say